the rest of the story. It was the kind of hostile, explosive behavior one might expect to see at a soccer match, but it happened one night at the opera. The trouble began in Sao Paulo, Brazil, when Leopoldo de Miguez, a Brazilian conductor, began feuding with his mostly Italian musicians. The opera company's next stop, Rio, happened to be Miguez's hometown. There he chose to publish an angry letter in the local newspaper, which he concluded by declaring his resignation from the company. Well, the audience gave no indication of having read the letter as they happily entered the theater that night, seemingly thrilled in the anticipation of seeing their native son in action. But then, as the house lights dimmed, the figure ascending the podium was not that of the adored Miguez, but of the orchestra's Italian concertmaster, Spirti. He, the impresario, had decided that he would conduct the opera Aida in the absence of Miguez, and yet as reasonable as that decision had sounded moments before, there now arose from the darkness a unanimous groan of displeasure, and it quickly grew into a hissing, howling frenzy. Startled, the concertmaster spun around, only to be greeted by a crescendo of jeers, and so, with no reason to continue and every reason not to, the humiliated Spirti stormed from the podium. Backstage, the impresario tore his hair. "You," he shouted to the company's chorus master, Aristide Venturi, "you get out there." And obediently, the latter edged his way out. But then the audience caught sight of him, and another deafening wave of vitriol poured forth. So Venturi retreated, preferring to face the impresario's wrath than that of an angry mob. At once, everybody in the company realized what was about to happen. Without conductor Leopoldo de Miguez, there would be no performances. With no performances, there'd be no money. With no money, there'd be no opera company at all, a particular hardship for the Italian musicians who would be stranded so far from home. And so in the midst of this burgeoning riot, keenly aware of the desperate situation that lay before them, the orchestra members quickly evolved a plan. They must find the youngest of the musicians among them, somebody in the orchestra whose apparent innocence might disarm the furious public, and they must make him their conductor for the evening's performance. At that, all eyes fell on the young cellist. He was barely 19, rather sweet-looking. He would do. Now the audience is still hooting and hollering, and the orchestra members are physically pulling this young cello player from his chair. The boy is wide-eyed, protesting vigorously, shaking his head like a frantic colt. Now they're pushing him out onto the podium. At once the crowd falls silent, perhaps out of amazement or curiosity, but at least they're quiet now. And then this slender young cellist, his limbs trembling, does something peculiar. He closes the score, just closes the book, folds up the music on the stand before him, and glares out over the orchestra, and raises his hands to the ready position, and with precise motions, completely from memory, he urges forth the towering strains of the entire opera, Aida. That night, 100 years ago, quite by accident, a first magnitude star in music history was born, for it was in that magic hour that a nervous, anonymous young cellist was forced to abandon his cello for a conductor's baton, and he never relinquished it thereafter. You know the teenager who reluctantly rescued his comrades, only to be hailed one day as the greatest conductor of all time. You know him as Arturo Toscanini. Only now you know the rest of the story.